It gives me great pleasure to introduce Dan from Santa Maria.
My name's Dan, I'm an alcoholic. Whoa. That's why I didn't want to look back. There's a lot of people here. I'm nervous, it's Sunday night. And first of all, I'm gonna welcome all the new people, man. If I don't make any sense tonight, I just want all the new people to know that they're welcome here in this fellowship, man. I can be here all night and speak the whole hour about how much gratitude I got for Alcoholics Anonymous and what it's done for my life, you know. But if you're new, man, I just want you to know that you're welcome here, you know. Doesn't matter, man. I've been in and out of this program so many times, and not one time did you guys say, hey, I'm sorry, you can't come here no more, you know. I didn't burn out my privileges here, you know. And the reason why I welcome the newcomers, I had this sponsor, and he told me the most profound thing I ever heard, man. And I was going through it, having problems with my kids, and my sponsor told me, you know what, why don't you treat them like a newcomer? And I was like, what does that mean, man? He goes, why don't you love them no matter what? You know? Such a novel concept, you know? I never heard anything greater than that. You know, I've heard some other stuff when this guy speaks right here, but anyways, you know, and it's very important that the newcomer is welcome and comfortable in these rooms, man. You know? And when I showed up here, man, my life had been barbecued, man. And I heard this old timer say, man, Alcoholics Anonymous works when you're all out of options, man. And I was all out of options, man. I didn't have nothing left, you know. I wasn't like Felix the Cat, you know. I had tricks in my bag, or I didn't have no tricks up my sleeve or anything like that. Nothing about me said I was on top of my game. My life had been barbecued, you know. And I don't mean that in a light sense. What I mean by barbecued is every avenue towards something positive have been burnt the F up, man. You know? And if you're new in the rooms, man, I just say sit back and relax, man. Let off that load for a minute. You know? Put down the bag, man. Put down the weapons, you know? Everything you've been fighting, you don't have to fight no more. You know? And one of the biggest paradoxes here in these rooms is surrender to win, you know. And if you haven't noticed, you know, I'm a little darker, you know, lighter shade of brown or whatever, you know. We got a lot of pride, man, and we don't do that. We do not do stuff like surrender to win, you know. That's a sign of weakness for someone like me. And coming in these rooms, man, I know I didn't want to live that old life that I was living, you know. And so for the newcomers, man, I just want you guys to know that you're welcome here. You know, you guys are welcome. Keep coming back. Even if you don't hear anything at this meeting, just keep coming back. Keep coming back, you know. Out of respect for Alcoholics Anonymous, I wear this little monkey suit, you know what I mean? A shirt, tie. My sponsor told me I should do that, and so I take suggestions, you know. And I got here with a level of humility that, I didn't want to live like that no more, man. And I wasn't questioning when I got here. You know, I got a sponsor. They told me, get a sponsor, you know. I showed up to the rooms. I have a sober date, May 30th, 2013. And when I showed up to the rooms, I wasn't about to start fighting this program. I showed up here because I didn't want to live the way I was living, you know. So I got a sponsor right off the bat, man. And the same thing, the same direction and willingness I had in the first 30 days is the same willingness I have to take any direction today, you know. It's that level of humility I had to come to, you know. And in the book, it even tells us in the stories, humility is a key, man. Humility is a key. And I heard this other guy, Chuck C., talk about the golden, you know, one of the golden rules around here is being rigorous self-honesty. And I had to be honest with my condition. And I had to come to believe that there is a God. And I had to fully concede that I am an alcoholic, you know. I didn't come in here kind of, sort of, maybe just a little. I just want to see what you guys are doing. I see some old homies in here. I want to see what's up, you know. It wasn't like that, man. I showed up here, and I want this program. Tell me what to do. And I've been a robot ever since. So I got a new lifestyle, a new career. I'm a robot. Anyways, you know, I'm not going to get into a big old drunk-a-log or anything like that, but I'm going to get into a drunk-a-log, though, okay? I was born and raised right here in Santa Maria. It's a big town today. It wasn't when I was growing up, though, let me tell you. You know, it was real small. And it was like I was related to every Mexican family in Santa Maria. You know, I got second, third, you know, 100 cousins, you know, and my dad was a barber, and my mom worked for the county in Santa Barbara. She worked in the clinic, and you know, it was like, you know, like a typical Mexican family, man. I would watch them. You know, they'd have mariachis, they had trios, and they would hoop and holler every time and drink tequila, and you know, they had all that fun stuff going on. And my parents were always partying, man, and my family, they always came over and they always partied, they always drank. And so I was around it all my life, you know. I had a father who was a gambler, and he liked going to horse races, and he would always carry me on his shoulders. And I don't know if anybody can remember this far back, but they used to have these little plastic six-pack Coors coolers, you know. And I'd carry it for my dad, and he would tell me, open one up, mijo, and I'd open one up. And I don't know why, I always took the first drink, and I gave it back to him. And it was kind of like a routine, you know. I don't remember ever feeling the effects of it, though. And New Year's parties, they would drink this cheap-ass wine called Cold Duck. I don't know if anybody knows what Cold Duck is, but that's some nasty-ass cheap wine. And they would always give me a sip of that for New Year's, you know. And then my parents, they got divorced when I was 7 years old, and I remember I was traumatized because, you know, those were my parents, man. And when they split up, I kind of took a big blow from that. You know, knowing my dad, I was staying with my mom. My dad moved to the other side of town. And in all honesty, that's not what makes me an alcoholic, though. But I remember being traumatized from that, you know. So my dad moved to one side of town. My mom lived on a, back then it was a middle-class side of town. And so I went to school at a middle-class school here in Santa Maria. And after school, my playground was the projects. You know, I had family there. I had a sister who lived there, nieces and nephews. And so I'd go to school on one side of town, and my playground was on the other side of town, you know. And I grew up around a lot of, you know, different. I was mixed up, you know. Because it came to a point, I say mixed up, it came to the point where I'd hang out with the kids on the good side of town and also hung out with the kids on the bad side of town. So I like to skateboard on this side of town, but I'm back on this side. So I was a cholo on a skateboard. I don't know if anybody knows anything about that, man, but, you know, I was confused. I was very confused. I didn't know what was right. And so, you know, I'm getting involved in a little gang activity, so I'm over here on the middle class of town, and I'm saying, yeah, the projects. And these kids are like, what's wrong with this guy? He got Tourette's, you know? Cause I'm shouting out stuff that didn't even really make sense to me, you know? But, and that's how I lived, man. And I was just so mixed up, man. I was just so mixed up. And I was trying to get out of here. I don't know if anybody ever done that. Have you ever tried to get out of here? I think that's why I drink and use, but I remember at 11 years old, man, I made a decision that I've been watching all this stuff all my life, people drinking, people smoking weed, brothers and sisters and all that stuff. And I remember at 11 years old, I had a good friend, and we're like, yeah, you know what, let's drink tonight. And I was like, all right, yeah, let's try this out. And I remember we drank, man. I remember the beginning of us starting to drink. And I just remember waking up the next morning and my friend telling me all the stupid and ridiculous stuff I was doing. So I blacked out my first time I ever drank. And I don't know if I drank out of resentment towards my family or not, but, you know, I had a family. I'm the only one between my mom and my dad, so I had a bunch of half-brothers and half-sisters from both sides of my mom and my dad. And so I grew up feeling different, and my siblings made sure I felt different, you know. They didn't like me too much, you know. And I was the baby, and I was spoiled. They gave me whatever I wanted, whenever I wanted, and all I had to do was throw a fit, you know, and I got whatever I wanted, you know. And I don't know if that was the reason why I drank, but I remember I drank, and I liked the effect, and I remember coming to the next morning and having my buddy tell me all the ridiculous things I did. And I don't remember making a conscious decision to want to do it again or not, but it was a while before I did it again. And I like sharing this story. I'm going to share a story with you guys because it kind of makes me feel comfortable, even though I'm already comfortable, but I always share the story anyways. So I'm 11 years old, right, and I'm about to start the new school year. My birthday's in September, so, you know, school year usually starts around that time. And I remember my mom went out. She went out to dinner with her friends, and She left her car home, and I happened to find the keys, and I, you know, if you haven't noticed, I got a big head, you know what I mean? Because I like to think and figure shit out on my own, right? So I made a decision that, you know what, I'm gonna go for a ride in my mom's car, and here I am, 11 years old, right? So I'm living on the middle class side of town, and where do I go? I go to the projects to pick up all of my homies, all my little friends, and I'm like, let's go. And they're like, oh my God, crazy, yeah. And so we're driving around, and the oldest kid in the car is 14 years old, right? And we're driving around. We don't know what we're doing. We're smoking, we're drinking, and we're just having a good time, right? And back then, man, cruising was a big thing around here. And I was like, we were way on the other side of town, and we're like, yeah, let's go to Broadway. And I'm like, man, but I'm just a little guy, you know what I mean? We're just taking back roads at this point, you know? We're taking all the back roads, and we're going by a girl's house, and we're honking the horn, and, you know, kid stuff, right? Boy stuff. And I just remember I was coming up Miller, and we're like, yeah, you know what? Let's go to Broadway and go cruising on Broadway with the rest of the big kids, you know? So I'm like, all right, next thing you know, I hear, bloop, and I was like, oh, hell no. And I didn't know what to do, and the cop just called, get pull over, and I was like, oh, man, what do I... So we pulled over, and where Jack in the Box is right here by the freeway, it used to be a 76 station, and I remember pulling in that 76 station. He kept telling me to stop, but I was trying to... I didn't know how to park, right? I'm 11 years old. Who knows how to park at 11 years old, you know? And we're at, you know, let me go back a little bit. You know, as I was a kid, my dad would get drunk and take me I forgot what the highway is called, San Marcos Pass. I don't know if anybody's familiar with San Marcos Pass. And we used to go to Santa Barbara. He married another woman, and he would put me on his lap, and he would get drunk, and he would pass out, and I'd be just steering.
Oh,
you know? So that's where I kind of learned how to drive, you know? That's where I got them ideas from. So I pull over, the cop comes up, and he walks up, and he's like, license and registration. And I'm looking at him like, for real? And he goes, and he comes to look at me like, hey, license and registration. He sees me, and he's like, oh, shit. He's telling his buddy, come here, check this out. You know what I mean? Because you got a bunch of kids in a car driving around, you know? And I remember I went home, and I got my ass beat for the very last time, you know? And the sick part about it is I have an alcoholic father, right? And my father beat my ass for the very last time. He told me, I'm never going to hit you again. And I'm like, I don't know if I should believe that or not. And then he starts laughing, and I'm like, oh, hell no. You know, people laugh and they get mad again. So I was expecting that from him. He goes, where the hell did you guys go? And I told him, he's like, how long were you guys driving around for, you know? And I told him, and he was just getting off on it. He just couldn't stop laughing. So what happened next was on my 12th birthday, right after school started, he goes, on your birthday, we're going to go to Vegas. I'm like, okay. And he goes, you're going to drive. And I was like, what the hell? And mind you, you know, my dad, he was a gambler, man. We went to Vegas. We went to Reno. And I'd been there enough times, you know, in the whole 11 years of my life that my birthday came, he pulled over on 166. He gets out. He's already drunk. And he goes, get in the driver's seat. You're driving. And I have another little friend. He must have been about that high back then. You know, he was a little short guy. And we drove all the way to Vegas. And I had a brother, I had a stepbrother, you know, and he was back there with my dad all drunk, and he went and got us wine coolers, and we were drinking all the way up there, smoking weed, and you know, that's insanity, that it's a family disease, and I learned from the best, right? I got my whole family, they're doing whatever they're doing, but what they're doing didn't make me an alcoholic. Making that choice on my own and enjoying it, you know, and liking the effect, that's what makes me an alcoholic. You know, I didn't drink for any other reason because, mind you, man, that stuff tastes like crap, man. Especially being an 11, 12-year-old kid, right? That's not the best taste in the world. But I knew the effect, what was going to happen, and that was magic time for me. That was the magic time for me, you know. I loved the effect. I didn't drink for any other reason, mind you. You know, and I'm the alcoholic where I turned out, you know, my last run, man, I love cheap vodka. I don't know any other cheap vodka people in the house, you know. Anyways, I love cheap vodka, right? Mm-hmm. I love cheap vodka, and that's where I start, and I work my way down, you know, down to the bottom of the little 99-cent boxes that they got at the liquor store. You know, I'm grabbing whatever I can, you know. So my drinking started to progress, you know. And where it really progressed is when I was 13 years old, I'm in junior high, hanging out with all the cool kids, you know what I mean? Everybody's drinking and smoking and having a good time, you know? I used to smoke probably about 3 packs a day back then at 13 years old, you know?
Wow.
Plus other things. But anyways, you know, and I remember going to this party, and I share this story because I see where my alcohol progressed, you know? And it's because I did this inventory, I noticed the patterns of my behavior, you know? When I was 13 years old, I went to go hang out with a friend, and there was a girl there, and I really liked her, and she was inviting me, so, you know me, I'm a thinker. I'm thinking she likes me, right? There I am, thinking again, and I went to go hang out with them, and back then, this alcohol called King Cobra just came out, and oh, man, I've been wanting to try it because I'm hearing all these stories about it, right? It gets you fucked up, you know, and all that stuff. And so I'm taking some shots. They go to the store. They bring back this King Cobra. And I just remember drinking a couple of drinks, and I was through because I already took a couple of shots of tequila. And I'm telling her, hey, tell her to come over here, eh? You know what I mean? I'm trying to hook up with this girl, right? And then next thing you know, I was like, oh, bro, I think we should go now. He's like, nah, quit being a, you know, and I was like, well, show me where the restroom is. And I remember I didn't make it to the restroom. She had a real nice house, and I threw up all over that damn restroom. All over the plush carpets that were in there and everything, man. And what happened was, the reason why I share that story is because after I left, after I finally sobered up and I left, man, I set myself out to be an alcoholic, man. I wanted to drink like a man and be able to hold my liquor, you know, and stuff like that. And I continue to drink even more crazy, you know. And all through school, got to high school, they sent me to continuation school, which was a perfect school for a guy like me because all they wanted me to do was go in there and make a half credit and you can go home. And I went to that school, and I meet up at my friend's house, and you know, we do a little recreational marijuana, and I go to school, and I'm smart now because I'm on that recreational marijuana, and I do my half credit. I leave school, and I go, and we would drink all day. We would drink all day, recreational marijuana all day. And right when I turned 18, man, I had another great idea, man. This was probably one of the best ones, or maybe not. I decided to drop out right on my 18th birthday. I'm like, what do I got to go to school for? You know what I mean? I'm 18. I can do whatever the hell I want to do. But I wasn't thinking about, you know what, your mom can kick you out at any moment, right? But thank God she didn't. Anyways, so I dropped out of high school. I moved out to the Bay Area with another friend. And I started doing a lot of drinking. And then I started doing a little recreational cocaine, you know. And if you get offended, I apologize, but, you know, that stuff is part of my story. As a matter of fact, when I was 13 years old, I tried it for the first time, and it progressed later on when I was about 16, 17. But I moved out to the Bay Area. I was only out there a month, and my life got barbecued real quick. Everything just went bad. And I was living with one of my brother's friends. He's like 50 million years older than me, but and he started getting in trouble and going to jail. And I was like, how am I going to live out here? And I came back home, and life just got worse, man. It didn't get better. And then I had another bright idea because I was so wrapped up in this lifestyle that I could not leave it whatsoever. And I was thinking, you know what? I just need a girlfriend, right? I had been away from girls for a long time. That drinking was priority. I didn't have time to get in relationships. I didn't have time to do any of that fun stuff. And I didn't realize that till later on that, you know what, alcohol, my whole life, that was everything to me. And what I come to terms with here in Alcoholics Anonymous, and what I understand, is alcohol was my best friend. It was my companion. It was my lover. It was everything I wanted. Everything. And every relationship was just getting in the way of that. It was just getting in the way of that. And to break that down into terms, I was selfish and self-centered, and I had no capacity or compassion towards any other human being at all, including myself, you know? So I got with this woman, and we were hanging out, and the next thing you know, we're drinking, and we're doing all that recreational stuff, and she gets pregnant, and I'm like, what do I do? And I had no clue, man. I had no living skills whatsoever. I have no idea how to live life on life's terms. No idea whatsoever. And she ends up pregnant, and she probably did the best thing for both of us, and she decided to leave me. you know? And I push everybody away, man. When I drink and when I use, man, I push everybody who loves me so far away that I don't deserve to have them in my life whatsoever, you know? Can you get that, please?
No. Hello, goodbye.
But, yeah, so she's gone out of my life. I continued drinking, doing all that other stuff, and my life doesn't get greater at all. And she calls me like a couple days after she had my oldest daughter and tells me, hey, you have a daughter. And I was like, how can I see her? And all I got was a ringtone. That was all I got. So all I knew was I had a daughter and I couldn't see her, you know? So I started doing things like wanting to die, man. I don't know if anybody can relate to that, but I became really suicidal. I didn't care anymore. I didn't care what was going on in my life. I didn't care what was going on in your life. And I became the isolated drinker. I'd stay in my room all day, all night. My mom would be knocking, Mijo, are you hungry? No. She'd be like, what's wrong with this guy, you know? And I just got in this real bad depression, man, and I couldn't get out of it. I couldn't get out of it. I wasn't able to look inside myself at all, you know? Maybe about 6 months goes by, and I get a call from Visalia Child Welfare Services out there, or CPS, and they were telling me that they were taking my daughter, and if I wanted to get custody of her, and I was like, hell yeah, you know? I'm like, hell yeah, you know? And they said, come out here, and you can see your daughter, and I went out there, and I see my daughter for the first time, and I swear, man, I seen that little girl, and they said, okay, you keep in contact with us and we'll make sure you get her. And you know what? I had no way, no self-will, nothing in my life to stop drinking and stop using. I couldn't, man. As much as I wanted this little girl in my life, this is my only daughter at that time, and I could not stop, man, whatsoever. I couldn't get outside of here, you know? I was still selfish and self-centered, And finally, they called me again in December, and she hadn't even been a year yet, and they said, we completely took her out of her life, and we want to come and pick her up. And so, this is what I do, being a spoiled brat. I send my mom to go pick her up, you know? I should have been out there, man. I should have been taking responsibility. But I'm so wrapped up in that life, man, I can't get out. I can't get out. And so I get this little girl, she's in my life, and I'm trying to do all the right things, you know, by selling these recreational things and trying to make a living for myself, which was a joke, you know. And the next thing you know, I get in trouble. I catch my first case. And I end up going to jail for my very first time in 95. And so this is where God comes in, you know. I go to jail, and everybody finds God in jail, right? I don't know about anybody else, man. I found, and that's about where I leave them, too, when I get out. And I found God. I had some examples in my life that were pretty good, and there was a gentleman who introduced me to all that, you know, the Bible, and I started thumping the Bible, and this guy gets out, and we're all praying over him. Yeah, go do good. And he's like, yeah, I'm gonna go do good. And this guy comes back a month later, sucked up, all in bad shape, and I'm looking at him, and there was an older gentleman in there, and he came up to me. He knew what I was thinking. He goes, hey man, it's not the messenger, the message. And I learned that early on, you know, that people are going to come in and out of my life and tell me all that good crap, but it's all about what am I going to do with that good crap, you know. There was a guy inside that book that gave me all the information I ever needed to know to learn to live a decent life, and I never followed it whatsoever, you know. So my little journey just started going in and out of jail, case after case, in and out, in and out. And finally, they sent me to a program in 2003. They sent me to this program. Actually, I'm going to talk about my first introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous. This was in 94. Before I ended up going to jail, I got in trouble, and they told me, they gave me diversion. They told me, why don't you go check out these meetings over here? It used to be called Casa Seca. It's over at Lazy Days. And I went to a meeting, right? I went to a meeting. And And these people in there were talking all that good stuff, man, talking about recovery and staying sober and clean. And man, these two gentlemen I was watching who were sharing, man, they were on fire, man. Let me tell you, I was sold. I'm like, you know what? I do got a problem. When I went in there, I didn't think I had a problem. But because of the way these guys shared, I think, you know what? Maybe I got a problem. And so I went outside afterwards, and they were smoking a cigarette, and I'm just trying to, you know, trying to worm my way into their conversation, what was going on, and I'm smoking a cigarette with them, and I was telling them, you know, so what do you guys do, man? You know what I mean? What do you guys do for fun now, you know, or what's going on? And these two guys look at each other, and they start laughing. And I was like, what? What are they laughing at? And they told me, man, we're about to go drink and get loaded right now. And in my mind, I was like, man, these guys were in there talking all that good. I was like, I couldn't believe it, man, because I was starting to seriously think I have a problem, right? And so I turned back to him. I said, let's go. Yeah, you know, and I left with them. And I took off with them. So my idea of what this program was is everybody talks out the side of their neck, right? It's all neck talk. 2001, they started up Prop 36 in July, and I was in there fighting another case, and they said, you know what, you're eligible for this program. Do you want to get out? And I'm like, yeah, let me out. They go, okay, in a couple of weeks. So I'm in there, and I'm calling. By the way, I had another two kids from that woman. At this time, I met another woman that had another little girl. And so I'm calling her up from jail, and I'm telling her, hey, check this out. They're going to let me out of the program, you know, but we're going to go to church. You know, I've been doing the Bible thing. You know, I feel like God's talking to me right now. And she goes, well, I'm doing a program right now, and I'm going to meetings, and I'm starting to change. I want this. And I was telling her, no, man, don't listen to them people, right, because I had an experience in these rooms. And I'm telling her, no, man, stay away from them people. That's the devil, you know, I'm telling her. They're a cult over there. I don't know what's going on. So she told me, she gave me an ultimatum. She told me, you know what, you come with me to one meeting. If you don't like it, then we'll just go do your Bible thumping thing. And I was like, all right, yeah, I'm going to show you. And so I showed up here with the loser's theme, right? I'm going to show her, man, this program, no way, man. It's not going to work. And by the end of that meeting, I was asking a gentleman to be my sponsor, you know. And that was in 2001. We used to have the Alano Club over here on Ben Wiley. And that's where I got really acquainted, man. I got a sponsor. I started working steps, and my life started changing. And that was the beginning of my first journey in recovery. And I was opening and closing, man. I was volunteering at that club and doing all that fun stuff. And I remember there's a biker dude who used to come over. He doesn't ride a bike no more, but he walks like he's in prison, right? And he's kind of short, little Caucasian guy. Anyways, I was working the snack bar one day, and he comes up. I just got my gear, and he told me, he goes, hey, man, he's all, don't you got kids? And he remembers I have a little girl. And I was like, yeah. And you know, people help each other out around here. So I'm like, yeah. I was thinking he's going to break me off something, right? And I was like, yeah, as a matter of fact. And he goes, why don't you get a fucking job, man? And I was like, he threw me for a loop, man. I didn't. And to be honest with you, my mind started running. I was like, hey, a job. I know, huh? And I went out and I got a job, you know. Like, I never thought of it before, you know. I was thinking, I got to open the club, I got to close the club, I got to be at this meeting, I got to, you know. My life was surrounded in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I got a job, and what a person like me does is I become a workaholic, and I started working. I'm calling in all my commitments, all the volunteer commitments, and I'm like, you know what, I can't be there. And I just stayed in work, and there was a guy from the fellowship who helped me get the job who was there. And one day he was like, hey, man, I'm going to go cash my check right now. And I was like, hey, can you give me a ride? And he's like, yeah. That should have been a sign right there, you know what I mean? The guy couldn't sit still. He's pop-locking by the friars, and, you know. That should have been the red flag. And I go with him, and I knew what he was doing right after. He goes, I'm going to make a stop real quick. Next thing you know, I'm 3 days later, man, I heard people share about this until it was my experience. I believed them. 3 days later, I finally come to, and I realized, oh my God, what the hell did I just do? For 3 days I've been drinking and getting loaded, and I didn't even know. I wasn't even conscious until it was all gone. And I was like, what did I just do? And now the courts, I was doing this Prop 36, they want to lock me up, they want to throw away the key. And I remember I couldn't stop either. I went through detox, and I did detox all wrong. You know, I got in a relationship while I was in detox. You know, I was one of them kind of guys. And I was like, yeah, she's going to save me. But what about your baby's mom? Oh, yeah, I forgot. You know, man, I'm telling you, I was doing it all wrong, right? So eventually I'm back out on the run. I'm doing the things that I do, people like me do, and they send me to this program in Santa Barbara, and I did the rescue mission for about 8 months, and I tried getting a relationship over there. They kicked me out over fraternizing, and I was like, yeah, cool, whatever, and I knew they were going to send me to prison. I went to prison my first term in 2004, and I remember my first term, I went in there, and I couldn't stand prison. I didn't want to be there at all, but I was just faking the funk. I had to fake it till I make it. And I remember I got to level two in Tehachapi, and I started visiting this church on the side, you know, and I got in this little ordainship program, and I got ordained while I was on that yard, and I just remember there was other churches that people had started them coming out of prison, and I thought I was going to be the next Billy Graham, you know what I mean? And I remember I left that prison with all my credentials to go and start and do my own thing, and 6 hours after I paroled, man, I was drunk, I was loaded, and I lost all them credentials and have no idea to this day where they went. And I was off and running again, man. And so I went through a series of going in and out of prison, in and out of prison, in and out of prison. And finally, 2008, man, they gave me another chance, and they sent me to Santa Barbara Rescue Mission one more time, and I got sober there. I got a sponsor the first day I went in there, and that sponsor beat me up with the book, and he made me beat up the book myself, you know. I remember one day, it was a Mother's Day, and I called him up, or he called me, and he goes, hey, you're going to go spend time with your mom, and I was out in Santa Barbara, and I was telling him, you know what, they're going to be partying and all that stuff, and you know what the big book says, and this was my first assignment. He goes, I go, you know what the big book says, we shouldn't be around, and he goes, no, I don't, once you find it, call me back, boom, he hung up on me. And I was like, jerk, right? And I had to find it. I had to find it in the book. It says we shouldn't stay away from them places unless we have a legitimate reason for being there. And that started off this whole big book dumping thing. You know, I started dumping the big book more often than not, you know. And I graduated that program and came back to Santa Maria, and I started doing things out here. Took a lot of commitments, sponsoring a lot of guys. And then my father passed away. It was August 20th of 2010. And I had a daughter who had been suffering from leukemia, and when she was first diagnosed in 2007, man, I couldn't stop, man, that hurt me a lot, and I continued to use and drink. I couldn't stop, man, and when I finally got sober, man, I spent a lot of time with that little girl. You know, she went into remission. They took the port out, and I was just spending every moment that I could with that little girl because I had to mend that relationship because I'd been in and out of prison, in and out of her life, and I spent a lot of time with her. And my father passed away. She had a relapse with the leukemia. She was going up to a cottage in Santa Barbara. We trusted them to take care of her in the pediatrics. It was 5 East, and I remember that my dad's last words were, "Mijo, you go be with your daughter. You go be with your daughter." And 2 days later, my father passed. I was in Santa Barbara, and I spent a lot of time with her. They released her from the hospital, and she came back home, and I was trying to spend every moment that I could with that little girl because I owed her to be a father to her because I hadn't been much of anything to her. And November 24th of 2010, she passed away, and I took that blow. And what happened was, and I know it now because I did this inventory, right? I've done this 4-step. I don't know if anybody knows what the 4-step is, but, you know, we do that inventory, and we be as honest as we can. And I was honest, man. I have resented that little girl coming back this time. I resented her because she passed like that. My father passed like that. Not only that, but I resented God because he took him like that. And I didn't know that. What happened was after she passed, I didn't drink, I didn't do anything, and I got asked to speak right after, and I was doing all these things, and what I didn't notice until this time coming back is I went from recovery to ego. I went from recovery to ego. And I was running on, yeah, man, I can walk through anything, right? you know, take my father, take my daughter. You know, here I am, still sober. Come on now. And I didn't know that. I didn't know that. And the first thing that went wrong was I got in a relationship, and the moment things didn't go my way, I just lost it. And I went back. You know, I went back out. It was July 15th of 2011. I went back out. And every day, man, you people were messing up my buzz, you know what I mean? You guys were killing it. Every day I wanted to come back, but I was so wrapped up into this thing right here that I couldn't let go. And through a series of events of just running out there, started off slow, I didn't want nobody to know, and next thing you know, everybody knew, and everyone in Santa Maria is trying to come and see me and bring me back to that old life, and I just couldn't get outside of myself. I didn't want to come back to Alcoholics Anonymous and pretend like I wanted to stay sober while the whole time I'm thinking about what liquor store I'm going to hit right after. You know? I couldn't live like that. So through, like I said, through a series of events, and, you know, 1 minute, I'm living in my mom's house, next minute she's kicking me out. I'm living in my car, next thing you know, my car gets towed away. And I find myself sleeping in a park out in Goleta. And nothing, and what was sick was I didn't see the problem in all that. I couldn't see the problem. And I'm on Facebook telling everybody, yeah, I'm camping out in Beverly Hills. You know what I mean? You know, because what happened was I crossed an invisible line, man, that I had people wanting to kill me both real and imaginary. You know, that, I don't know if anybody can relate to that, but it was all in my head, man. And the other part is everything the big book had told me would happen if I did the work happened, and everything it told me if I didn't do the work started to happen in my life. You know? I don't know if anybody knows what this book is. This is the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. The program is outlined in the first 164 pages of that book. And everything it told me that would happen in my life happened. You know? And I wanted to get back. I wanted to get back here. And, like I said, I went out July 15th of 2011. I was sitting in that park one day, and it hit me right here. It had to hit me right here. Because, in that little short time, I was in the hospital. I was dying. They had to pump 5 bags of this. I didn't know cheap vodka was going to dehydrate every cell in my body, including my brain, right? And I went in there, and I had a viral infection. I thought I was sick, right? They said, no, man, you got more than that. They go, when was the last time you drank? And it had been 6 days since I drank. And they pumped 5 of these bags inside my body, and I left that hospital, and my first thought as I was walking out of that hospital was, I need a drink. I need a drink. And I went right back to drinking, man. And it led me all the way to that park, and I'm sitting in that park one day, and it hit me like a ton of bricks right here. And thank God I woke up just enough to know, hey, I got to get back to Alcoholics Anonymous no matter what. And I worked my way back to town, and I had already caught another case, and I went to go, I was checking in with that program, and I was trying to stay sober on my own, and in 4 days, man, my whole body hurt while I was trying to stay sober, just enough to get in this program, right? My whole body hurt. It hurt. And I can't even explain how I felt when I finally got here. That whole pain, I didn't feel that no more. And what I was lacking was that spiritual experience, that spiritual connection, because it finally hit me when I showed up here May 30th, 2013, man, and I surrendered. I didn't know, I didn't make a conscious decision that morning that I was going to stop drinking. I had no idea what I was going to do until I went to a book study that night. And my story is, when the student's ready, a teacher will appear. And when I got to that meeting, I seen the guy who I was going to ask to be my sponsor. And I took his direction fully, man. I didn't question, hey, if I read this book, is it going to hurt me? If I start writing out this 4-step, am I going to have problems? You know, I didn't question anything, man. Until this day, man, I tell my sponsor what's going on, and he gives me the direction. I'm like, cool. It's like going to the doctor, right? You go to the doctor, you tell him, look, this is my problem. He's going to write you out a prescription, or he's going to tell you, why don't you try this? And we do it, you know? I want this thing more than anything. I don't ever want to change my date again, man. I don't ever want to change that date again. You know, this is the best thing going for me, man. This is literally that last house on the block for a guy like me. And it is the last house on the block. Anyway, so You know, this is the best thing going in my life. And so I'm going to share this real quick, and I'm going to shut up maybe. But there's a couple things I'm going to read, whether you like it or not. But first, I'm going to share this. You know, coming back this time, I had 4 months, and I lost a sister. And that's when my thinking was like, you know what? Every time you get in recovery, man, people are falling off the face of the earth, right? I lost a sister, and we were really close, but yeah, she wasn't living out here at the time. And that hit me because that was probably the one sister I've ever been close to, you know? At 8 months, my mom slips into a coma. And that's the one woman that when she had told me to leave, I didn't come back. I didn't come back begging. I wasn't trying to be a spoiled brat again. I gave her her space that she needed and let her see with my actions. And I wasn't trying to show her anything. She just seen. You know, it's because I worked this program to the best of my ability, man. I give it my all. I don't kind of sort of maybe just a little work this program, you know. And she slipped into a coma, and it hurt, you know. I was like, you know what, I had to come to terms with it. I went the day after she went into that coma. I got there early in the morning, and I went and I prayed over my mother, and I gave her one last good cry, man. One last good cry. And I felt the peace right here because I was willing to let go and accept the fact that my mother's about to pass away. And she was everything to me, man. She was everything to me. And I felt that peace and I was okay. And for the next couple of days, I felt like it was going to be Christmas the moment she leaves. And the reason why I say that is my life is going to change. And I have no fear about it. I have no fear that I'm not going to have a parent. I'm not going to have anybody. All I got is my children. And when she passed away, man, I felt that, you know. And all you people were there for me too, man. We had the top floor. She was on the fourth floor, and everybody, family, fellowship people, everybody came out to support. You know, my brother Billy right here has been by my side through the whole thing. You know, and he's a good friend of the family. You know, I don't know, man. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're new, you probably want to throw up at hearing that. But I love Alcoholics Anonymous because I'm able to walk through things like that. I got you people to lean on at the same time, you know. I'm going to read something that kind of sums everything up in a nutshell for me. And it says, the great fact is just this and nothing less, that we have had deep, effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude toward life, toward our fellows, and toward God's universe. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we can never do by ourselves. And that's what I showed up here and I surrendered the program. My life has changed. Like I couldn't even imagine the life that I have today, you know. I was going to school, I was interning, and they just hired me as a counselor. And I could never imagine that happening in my life, you know. I'm about to move out of my mom's house that I've lived there all my life. You know, I'm not going to say my age, but it's a long time, right? Anyways, 41 years, man. I lived in that house, and I'm about to move out of it tomorrow. And of course, I got a little fear because it's natural for me to have that fear, right? But I have strength from this God in my understanding, who I truly believe is everything in my life today. I would be nothing if I did not tap into this God and my understanding, you know, I would be nothing, man. And this book has shown me how to get in connected with that, you know. We have a chapter, it's called How It Works, but it doesn't exactly tell us how it works. It doesn't say when it works. It just says it works, man, if we want it, you know. Another thing I want to read, this is my reading time, is... It's something that Bill had said and I read a long time ago, and I'm a firm believer of these words right here. It says, it is a design for living that works in rough going. And there's a good reason why he put that. It's because life, we don't get sober and life just goes like this, right? We're going to have ups and downs, you know what I mean? And I come to learn that my God, in my understanding, wants to know how I'm going to act when things get rough, you know? the last thing I need to be saying is, you know what? I don't know where God's at. I don't think he's trying to help me out in this situation. You know? It tells us in the book that we need to capitalize opportunities like that to show that his omnipotence is real in our life. You know? It says to capitalize moments like that. And I believe it, man. When things get hard in my life, I know it's like, I got to ask God, hey, what am I supposed to learn from this? Where do I go? Left or right? You know? And wait. And in every situation I've been in just these past couple months, is I've been trusting God no matter what, man. I trust God. I do the footwork and leave the results to God. And so far, he's given me a pretty good life, good and decent life. You know what? If you're new, I'm gonna share one more thing before I say that. I'm going to tell you why I do this. If I can find it. Okay. So I'm going to read this and I'm going to be quiet. It says, I spend a great deal of time passing on what I learned to others who want and need it badly. I do it for four reasons. One, the sense of duty. Two, it is a pleasure. Three, because in doing so, I'm paying my debt to the man who took time to pass it on to me. Four, because every time I do it, I take out a little more insurance for myself against a possible slip. And if you're new, man, I just want to welcome you guys to keep coming back, man. Keep coming back. Keep coming back until you're willing to reach out and ask somebody for help, you know, until you're willing to do the work around here, you know. I learned that when I do the work, I get the results. When I'm not willing to do the work, I get no results, right? I get no results. It tells me half measures availed me nothing. It doesn't say half measures availed me 50%. It says half measures availed me nothing. So if you do the work, you'll get the results. Keep coming back. It works.
Let's give Dan another round of applause. Thank you, Sarah, for speaking tonight. The speaker will be available after the meeting to thank.